Hey, everybody, Sunny here. Just reminding you that this free feed still exists. Maybe you're still getting it. Maybe you haven't unsubscribed, hopefully. You know, we're still posting every Friday at 8 a.m. over at subbeacon.com. New episodes live there. Sometimes we have bonus episodes. A lot of the times we have bonus episodes. We got a bonus episode coming up this week on Monday. But go sign up there. It's as little as $1 a month. It helps keep the lights on here. And keeps things going. So hope to see you over there if you enjoy the show.
Miles, being Spider-Man is a sacrifice. I was in danger.
You have a choice between saving one person and saving every world.
Send me home.
I can't do that.
I can do both! Spider-Man, always!
Not always.
What about Uncle Ben?
If not for Uncle Ben, most of us wouldn't be here.
Can't stop me now!
You can't run forever, kid!
I can't lose one more friend.
Miguel, this isn't what we talked about!
You knew?
You had no idea what you're doing!
Welcome to the Subbeacon Podcast. I am your co-host, Mike Warren. I am joined, as always, by my two fellow co-hosts, Jonathan V. Last and Sonny Bunch.
I love that. I love the phraseology that we've built into this. The questions about who is co-hosting and hosting.
Well, somebody got onto me in the comments about you should really make sure that you indicate that they are your co-hosts, that you are not like some, I don't know, like
interloper.
Exactly. I don't know.
See, but I feel like now JBL and I have been downgraded to your level, which is wrong. We should
I don't think
what?
So.
I feel like we're being dragged into the muck, into the Mike Warren mulchy muck.
So I should be sort of like deferential
I think you should probably be, you know,
is
just
this
a little,
an okay intro, sir?
Just be like, you know, I'm here out of the kindness of JBL and Sonny's heart.
Welcome to the Subbeacon Podcast. I am just your mere sub-level co-host, and I'm joined so graciously.
The intern, the, you know, flounder from Elliot in the Morning. Right?
Flounder.
Flounder.
God, Jesus.
Is that a big, good deep cut for you, Sonny?
That's a good one. No, the other one is, the other one is Chad Dukes. Remember Chad Dukes? Who was like an intern on the Don and Mike show. Who's an intern on the Don and Mike show He was either an intern on the Don and Mike show or an intern with the Sports Junkies, who then got like upgraded to producer and then got his own show. And then he got fired for racism. He got fired from 106.7 from some mild racism on his podcast, which is why I always say on this show, we need to keep the racism to a real low-key level. We got to be a real sotto voce. I'm not trying to get fired from any of my great jobs.
There we go. Well, look.
Like Chad Dukes.
I mean, that's a tale as old as time in terrestrial radio, really. I mean, how many interns to radio hosts have been fired for racism? Look. Can we just move on with the show, please? Because I don't like the direction the show is already going.
I'm sorry. I just the way you keep saying with my fellow co-hosts, I feel I don't know, man. I'm not sure. All right, I'll stop. I'm sorry.
Sonny, do you want to moderate this thing?
No, because, I don't at all. You're really helping us out.
So keep your yapper shut until I call on you.
As my fellow co-host, Mike Warren.
We are going to be talking about, I feel like we've gone into another universe in the multiverse here in this conversation. We are going to be talking about Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse a little later in the show. But first, let's talk about our weekends, our weeks. What the hell's going on? You know what? Not you, Sonny. JVL. Let's hear from you first.
Okay.
What are you trying to spit out here?
I was gonna do you guys want a report from Showcase Baseball?
Yes, sure. We do.
Because this is one of those things where you hear the urban legends about, like, oh yeah, well, there's this one strip club where, you know, the champagne room is all gold and the girls all look like Jessica Chastain or something, right? And you think, oh, it's not real.
They're all 5 feet tall.
Showcase Baseball is the real fucking deal.
Here we go.
And it was, I was not prepared for what this would look like. This was a 15U tournament, meaning that nobody there was over the age of 15. Every team I saw would have beaten the piss out of every high school varsity team I saw in Jersey this year, which, you know, many of which were very good teams. I would say every single kid there is likely to play college ball at one level or another. Most of them are likely to play Division One. A bunch of kids you could already see were the type of kids who are going to have to choose between getting drafted or going to college. It was absolutely nuts. It was a little bit like watching minor league baseball.
Now, was this a regional tournament for like the region of the Northeast or the Mid-Atlantic? Like, what? Where were these kids coming from?
So this tournament drew from as far north as New York, as far Midwest as Detroit, out into Ohio, and down to Maryland. So those are sort of your regional boundaries. It is Perfect Game. Perfect Game is the largest of these organizations, which runs showcases. And part of what they do is they are doing massive amounts of data collection on the games and on the players. And all of that then is made available to scouts and coaches for, you know, like $800 a month or $4,000, some very large amount of money. And it was very impressive. I would say it is, you know, you're seeing kids who are going to be playing professional baseball 4 or 5 years away from now.
What kind of data are you getting?
Well, you're not getting it, right? It's the coaches who are going to.
So we're not getting it, right? You got to keep your own. You get the data on your team. So, okay. You know, your team data belongs to you. But also, as part of your release for the team, Perfect Game also owns that data as well. And so for pitchers, I believe at the main site, they were tracking spin rate, but they were not doing that at the satellite sites where we were. They were giving velocity and location of pitches. They were doing, because of velocity and location with batters, they're getting whiff rates. Swing rates inside and outside the zone.
It's all sabermetrics
sabermetrics for 15 years. Yeah. And these kids are, again, very, very impressive. You know, we played a team with 4 kids on it already committed, like already signed to Division I schools.
Jeez.
As freshmen. I mean, it's very impressive. It was wild.
How? So what? Go ahead, Sonny.
No, I'm sorry, Mike. You go ahead. I didn't mean to. Well, my question. Co-host over here.
Yeah, thank you very much. I appreciate that. My,
you know your role, Sonny.
You speak when asked to. So, what do the kids themselves get out of this besides being on display for the scouts and getting this data? Like, or is there some kind of social, you know, socialization going on with other kids in the region? I don't know why that's so fun. No, no, there's nothing.
Yeah, there's no fun. Now, so for Flash, that's all this was, really.
Okay.
Because he is playing on a team from the DC metro area. It's got kids from Maryland and DC on it.
Right.
And 2 of the kids are his old buddies from his old travel team. So he got to hang with them, and it was like magic. You know, one of them was his catcher, and so he had to throw his old catcher, and that was the good stuff for him. But for everybody else, it is really, this is the pinnacle of high school and below baseball, and it's really the last step before. Because if you know, when you're playing Division I, you're basically pre-professional. Division I baseball now warehouses all of the kids who used to just go straight from high school into the minor league farm system.
Right.
So it was something else, man.
So what was Flash's line like? What do we got for a line here?
Flash did really, really well. So the caveat here is that things ended badly for him. He only threw 30 pitches, and on the 30th pitch, as the ball came out of his hand, like he went grab for his arm, and you know, immediately had the coaches pull him out. And I don't know if I texted you guys about this. It was not great, and we have an appointment with a sports doc in the North Jersey area who specializes in baseball and elbows later this week.
Oh no,
we're gonna have a look. I'm sure they'll do an MRI.
Are we looking at
TJ?
Tommy John?
We're looking at it?
I hope not.
But that'll turn his arm into a super arm.
So
I've seen Rookie of the Year.
Yeah.
So his line was very good. He faced five batters, two strikeouts, one walk, one hit, one ground out. You know, he hadn't worked up to throwing as hard as he wanted to, but he is on the list of guys who have been through the perfect game system this year. He's the fourth highest velocity from a freshman in New Jersey, and is probably would have been knocking on the door of top 10 nationally for his graduating year. So he did well.
Well,
his stuff was spectacular.
Well, I guess what I was asking more about the socialization aspect is, he's getting to see kids at that level play, you know, pitch against kids at that level from outside of his normal, you know, universe. That had to be, you know, I mean, I'm sure if he continues to do this, he'll see the same kids and he'll get to know them and get to, you know their game. So
yeah, it was, you know, the other interesting thing about it is, I've said this all along, and it's been true at almost every level I've been at. The assholes are always the kids of middling talent, and the kids who are the most talented tend to be pretty good eggs.
Yeah.
And we saw this, you know, the best team we saw, a program called US Elite, which boasts that every single kid that they take goes on to play Division I baseball. So literally the entire program. Everybody's going to go play Division I baseball. You know, these kids were as humble and quiet, respectful as you could possibly hope for. The one team we played.
That's because the personality has been beaten out of them entirely.
Maybe.
They play the right way.
So.
They play the right way.
They play the game the right way.
This is the Coach K of semi-pro high school baseball teams.
But the team we played in the consolation game, which was the worst of the three teams they played, these kids were such assholes that not only were they trash talking against Flash's team, but late in the game, and I'm sitting out in the outfield, this other team is on defense. They're in the field, and there is a team warming up outside to play next, not to play them, just, you know, a team that's going to be on in the game following them on the field. And these kids are trash talking the kids warming up, who they are going to have no interaction with. And I'm like, what the fuck is wrong with you?
Can't turn it off. They can't turn it off. No, I mean,
they can't turn it. Yeah. Right? Crazy.
Insane.
Anyway.
All right. Well,
that's all I got. It was wild. It's great. Allowed to ask Sonny to talk or
no,
should we not do
No. Why don't you let me handle this?
Okay.
Sonny,
sorry, sir.
Sonny, we'll come back to you in just a minute. I want to talk about me and my particular dudes chatting topic, which was kind of, I don't know, like I was not sure if this would be interesting. So if it is not interesting, you just stop me and say, we'll move on to Sonny. But
oh, I'll let you know.
Thank you, Sonny.
Don't worry.
Thank you. So I was cleaning some stuff out and I discovered that I had two Netflix DVDs or DVD.com in the envelope sealed that I have not sent. I've been meaning to cancel my DVD.com.
How long have you had these?
Well, we'll get there. But finding them prompted me to, of course, to send them off and then to
cancel. And which movies are they?
I will get there. We'll get there. We'll get there.
God, I need to know. Set the table for us.
I'm setting in just a minute. It also prompted me to cancel my DVD.com subscription, which I have had since 2009, and I have not used in years. And so when you cancel...
You keep saying DVD.com. What is DVD.com?
This is how Netflix has branded their DVD service.
They own DVD.com?
Yeah. Am I wrong? Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know because I haven't had Netflix by mail for 10 years now.
Yes.
Didn't they do like Quixter or something?
Yeah, they tried to change it to Quixter and then they changed it back to Netflix. But DVDs, it's like their own like internal branding of, it's sort of like Wing Street at Pizza Hut. You know, it's like you only find Wing Street at Pizza Hut. You only find DVD.com at Netflix. Anyway, so the two DVDs that I sent back, well, hold on, let me back up a second. When you cancel your DVD.com Netflix account, you get they go through, oh, you sure you want to cancel it? Yeah, sure. Yes, they're going to end the service this year. So yes, I want to cancel it. And then they give you the choice to download and print out your history, which I found fascinating. So I thought maybe we could go through a little bit. We won't go through everything, obviously, but the history and sort of maybe it can tell you a story and maybe you could look up your own history, you folks who have it or had it and canceled it a long time ago, and maybe tells you a story about your own movie experience. So the two that I sent back were The Lives of Others, and which I realized I never actually watched. So that was kind of a bust. And you know what? I cannot remember the name of the other movie, but The Lives of Others, right, is this movie that everybody says you've got to see. And I've been hearing that for years.
Didn't J-Pod write wasn't there a cover story?
Cover story for the Weekly Standard.
That's right.
Cover story.
Maybe, John, if you're listening, maybe the shortest cover story in the magazine's history, because it wasn't that long of a piece. But it was like an 1800 word piece, maybe.
Yeah.
I'm just asking. Just asking questions.
That would be a good research topic. The other one was Logan. The other movie was Logan. I don't know why I had that on DVD. But I actually did not get the last time I actually got DVDs in the mail was 2019.
Sitting on these things for 4 years.
Yes.
And paying for it every month.
I just want to clarify for people. How much did this service cost a month?
I think it was something like $10.99.
All right. You spent $11 a month for 4 years. People sometimes are like, how did Netflix make money? They bought all these DVDs and they had to mail them.
Idiots like me.
They had to mail them all. Let me tell you folks a story about one Michael Warren. Michael Warren here had two movies that he had held on to for 4 years. So that's 48 months at $11 a month. My understanding,
$528.
I was going to say $520.
Had you purchased those movies, you probably could have gotten them for $19.99 each. Instead, you paid $264 a piece.
You could have bought
those
movies 30 times each. You could have bought 30 copies of those movies, probably.
I'm wondering if bringing up this topic was a mistake.
No, this is great.
So I thought we'd have fun instead of shit on your co-host. We just have fun a little bit looking at. So I got this account in 2009.
I'm sorry. Are you not entertained?
I'm not having any fun. I was having fun. Not anymore. So the first movie that I rented in 2009. So 2009 was my first year. The first movie I rented was Idiocracy. I think it's a pretty good movie. To have your first Netflix rental. I've got a bunch of like great movies.
And what year was this that your first rental was?
2009.
Okay.
Several other movies that I rented that year, that first inaugural year, The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, Shattered Glass, Nick and Nora's Infinite Playlist. I did not like that one. I gave it like the lowest rating of the year, actually. Unforgiven, because you can also see your ratings, what you rated. Remember, you could rate the DVDs. Unforgiven, Rushmore, and Run, Fat Boy, Run. Do we remember that one? I don't remember that one. But it sounds fun.
I don't remember that movie at all. I don't know. What is the movie about?
I don't know.
Is that the one where, Edgar, or not Edgar, yeah. Wright, the guy from Shaun of the Dead?
Yes, whose name is escaped. Yes, it's like one of those movies. It's not in the trilogy, but it starred him.
It's not Edgar Wright, but it's the guy,
Simon Pegg. Simon Pegg,
yeah.
Yeah, it's a Simon Pegg. That's right. That's exactly right. So my biggest year was the next year, 2010. That was also the year I graduated from college, was living on my own. I imagine that is a big reason why. So lots of great movies, Red Dawn, The Rock, Die Hard. I guess there was somewhat of a theme here. Easy Rider, The Pink Panther, The Sting. I had 49 movies that I rented in 2010. 2011, then it starts to get into a lot of like TV shows. Like I apparently watched The Wire in 2011 because I have like remember you have to like get every disc of a TV show that you wanted to watch. So it's like The Wire season one, disc one, The Wire season two, disc two. And then all of these, and ooh, this is an interesting one. Unknown. Is that a movie called Unknown? Or is that simply an unknown movie? I don't know. So that's
there's a movie called Unknown.
It must be, but I don't, the other thing is I don't remember seeing half of these movies. The Wire, some Curb Your Enthusiasm. Again, I didn't have an HBO subscription. I have any of that stuff. So, but 2011 went down to 40, and then you can really see like after 2011, the number of DVDs that I rented like goes down considerably. 17 in 2012, 16 in 2013, 10 in 2014, 21 in 2015. I don't know. Oh, 2015, my first year with a kid. So maybe that's why I had 21. That year, and then it just drops back down 16 in 2016.
Well, but that was
12
also
in 2017. What was going on then?
But that's also about the time that streaming starts. So streaming, Netflix streaming starts in 2013.
That's
like
right.
House of. I mean, it starts before that, but the first season of House of Cards is 2013, I think. And that's when like people really started streaming stuff, and that's also about the time. I guess the Quixtar thing was 2 or 3 years later, but like whatever.
But here's the thing. There were a lot of things you could not get still on. I mean, there was so much that you couldn't get on streaming. And what I remember doing is going through and like searching for a movie. And if it wasn't, and I loved having this service, and it's maybe explains why I kept it so long. It's like, oh, they don't have it streaming, but I can get it on DVD and it'll be here in a day and a half, you know, like. So I did that with a bunch of movies. Whiplash I saw in 2015 because of that. 22 Jump Street, The Grand Budapest Hotel, The Last Emperor, like classic movies, new movies. The Insider I watched in 2015. So, you know, like, and then it really drops off. So like by 2017, I'm watching 12 movies. Some of those are TV shows. And then 2018 is just one movie. 2019, just two movies. And then it's done. Isn't that bad?
It is bad because you would have been better off simply buying on Prime Video, just purchasing a movie anytime you wanted to watch it. And then it's yours for forever instead of paying $8. Because what you're doing is you're paying like $8 to rent a disc for however long.
Well,
right?
this is just
buy it.
This is so I used to be the same way as Mike, where I had the DVD service and the DVD/Blu-ray service because there was stuff you couldn't watch on streaming. And I was like, I want to make sure I can watch anything. And then I realized after about a year of this that, oh, wait, I'm only getting like one or two movies a month, if that, via mail. I am better off just renting, paying the VOD rental fee to watch it on Amazon. If there's a movie I want to watch that isn't. And, you know, again, some of those movies weren't available. It was, you know, but whatever. But it got to the point where it's just like, well, this doesn't make any financial sense for me. This makes no sense at all. And that was back in 2015 or 16. I mean,
Mike,
I probably
still
hung up longer
than a DVD player.
I own a Blu-ray player. It's hooked up to the TV that we never use anymore. That's like our alternate TV in our basement. I still own it.
What's your main TV? Is it like a Roku?
Yeah, it's a Roku
TV. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know. It just,
how many discs do you own that have movie? How many movie discs do you own?
I have no idea, because we have all these DVDs that, like, my wife and I have like pooled together that were from our own collections. You know, like, I had like all the Seinfeld DVDs, for instance. So that, you know, that's like, you know, a ton of discs. So I'd probably say in my house, and they're just thrown in boxes somewhere, you know, and they're not like lined up nicely like yours, probably 100, you know, all said and done.
We have hundreds. And yeah, when we moved, we gave away almost all of them. I held on to a handful that I like, but I don't own a DVD player. I haven't owned a functioning DVD player in 5 years. So I don't know why I've held on to them. I should have just given them all away.
Well, for a long time, we had our Blu-ray player also had smart TV capabilities. That's why we had it, because we did not have a smart TV. So
we're like, hurting Sonny. Mr. Physical Media here's the thing.
I really appreciate the physical media thing. And the more that we go into this like streaming world, that we're brave new streaming world, like, I can see the value of it more and more. And I'm looking back at this list and like, just, there's all these great movies that I got to see because of this service. And
you could have seen them just by buying them on Amazon Prime.
But I didn't have Amazon Prime. Like, you have to understand, like, this is all like in my 20s, where like, I didn't have any money. And it was like this, like, one indulgence that I had, which was Netflix.
I mean, Netflix,
no cable, no nothing.
Netflix is Netflix DVD in particular was an enormous boon for people who wanted to really beef up their cinematic underpinnings. Like, I include myself in this, you know, I must have gotten Netflix DVD in 2005 or 2006. I mean, I remember I was living in a basement apartment in Capitol Hill, DC, and what I would do, I paid for the three discs at a time. So it was, you know, $15 a month or something. But I would like watch one, I'd send it back, I'd watch the next one. On that day, you know, the first movie would get to Netflix. And then by the time I watched the third one, the next movie is on its way. And I just like,
I bet you can.
History of viewing. But like, I bet I watched 80 or 90 movies a year that way, just like cycling through them, or TV shows or whatever. And that was another thing that it was really good for, was like, if you wanted to binge watch a show.
Yep.
You get a disc, you watch the disc in a day, you watch the next disc the next day, you watch the next disc the day after that. And by the time you get to that fourth day, in theory, a disc is on its way back to you, because they had distribution hubs all over the place.
You got them quick.
It was the turnaround was exceptionally good on those. So I was a big fan of Netflix DVD. I wish more people would still watch things on disc, and that would still be a viable business model. But Netflix, frankly, is to blame for killing off so much of this that, you know, fuck Netflix. So.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, thank you for indulging my little walk down memory lane. Sonny, what, like, say whatever you need to say, like, do your thing.
It's funny that you mentioned Shattered Glass, because this weekend on Saturday, a friend of mine, a guy who, I met, who I actually don't know that he is a listener to the Substandard or Subbeacon, but I know he listens to Across the Movie Island. Board Coast to Hollywood. His name's Aaron Reynolds. He's the guy who makes the Effin' Birds. I think he also runs Swear Trek account.
Yeah.
Anyway, he asked me to sit with him on he does this thing at the various Comic Cons, Fan Expo shows, where he like showcases weird bootleg shit, and he talks about it with a random person in every town. So I'm doing it in Dallas this weekend with Aaron. I'm going to be at the Dallas Fan Expo on Saturday, June 10th.
Are you going to be like on a VIP pass for the con?
Well, I've got a pass, and I think I have backstage green room access. Not the good green room. Ooh. Not the green room where like John Bernthal and Kevin Smith are going to be hanging out, I assume, but like where like the comic book guys are probably going to be, you know.
Very exciting.
So
worst
anyway,
backstage pass ever.
So that's going to be fun. If you're in Dallas and you want to, I'll be there. I think the panel's at like 5:30 or 5:20 or something like that at the Dallas Fan Expo. We'll be doing Bootleg Safari, me and Aaron Reynolds. But the reason, what I wanted to ask is, so I you mentioned Shattered Glass, and I love Shattered Glass. JVL, do you like Shattered Glass?
No, not especially.
You don't like Shattered? All right, well, that's too bad.
I mean, I lived through Shattered Glass, so.
Well, this is I love it because it really it gets at a very specific form of DC journalism. Yes. And does it pretty well, I think. Would you concede that?
Medium well.
It gets the personalities of a very specific type right, I think. The scene, the party where Hayden Christensen's Stephen Glass character is talking about the magazines he's written for, and everybody's kind of crowded around him and are like absorbing his aura. Like, I've been through, I don't know about you, but I've been to more than enough parties like that in my lifetime. Regardless, I like
the editorial meetings. I could relate. I could relate to some of that stuff.
I like the movie a lot. And Hayden Christensen is going to be at this. He's doing a signing and, you know, an evening talk event thing. And I was a little bit tipsy a couple weeks ago. And I was like, oh, Hayden Christensen's going to be at this thing. Oh, man, I bet I could. I wonder if I can get a poster on the, like a vintage poster, like, you know, one sheet from the. And I looked it up and Googled it. And sure enough, there was a place in England that was selling Shattered Glass one sheets. I was like, yeah, it's only like $10. This is great. I'm going to get it. And I'll get shipped over. It costs more to ship than the poster itself. And so I got it. And this is how big it is. You can't even really see.
Oh, so it's a full size one sheet.
It is not a one sheet. I was mistaken. It's a 30,
subway poster.
It's a 30 by 40, 30 inch by 40 inch, almost square shaped. I believe it's, I can't remember. There's like a specific name for it, but I think it's like B style poster. It's enormous. It's enormous. And I'm stuck with this thing. I own it. And I'm trying to decide if I want to spend the $150, because that's what it costs to get the signature from Hayden Christensen. Trying to decide if I want to get the $150. And then if I do this, I'm also going to have to go, because Rosario Dawson is there. So I'm going to have to go get Rosario Dawson's signature, too, which is like another $60. So I'm trying to decide if I want to spend another $200, essentially, on top of the, you know, $30 or whatever, the $20 I paid for shipping and the $10 for the poster. And then if I do this, so then I have this signed 30 by 40 poster that I have nowhere to put in my house. I'm going to have to spend another $80 on a frame and get that shipped out and then figure out some place to put it in my house. There's nowhere to put this in my house. If I lived in DC, if I was going into the Bulwark offices and I had an office space, I would just put it there. It would be like, it'd take up the whole wall. But now I'm just like, do I just bite the bullet on the 30? Do I just cut my losses?
No, in for a penny, in for a pound.
Do I cut my losses on this? Or do
you
I
cannot do ever.
Do I go all the way and then I got to hang on to it. And then I got to find Peter Sarsgaard and
Hank Azaria.
I gotta send Whit Stillman an email and be like, hey man, can I ask you to send something to Chloe Sevigny for me? Could you do that? And then like, cause she doesn't do fucking cons. Chloe Sevigny is not, she's, I don't know, smoking marijuana in some, some chateau somewhere. So now I'm stuck here. And like, the other thing is we actually do have like a mild professional connection to Billy Ray, who I think is friendly with Bill Crystal. Who mm-hmm. I could get him probably to sign it.
I have emailed with Billy
Ray. See, I could get Billy Ray to sign that. I could get the whole cast and crew to sign Shattered Glass poster, which nobody cares about Shattered Glass. Except for me. I could take it to Stephen Glass.
Could you get Stephen to himself to sign it?
I could get Stephen to sign it right under Hayden Christensen.
Listen,
I don't know what to do here. I don't know what to do.
I'll tell you what to do. You cannot, under any circumstances, pay somebody to sign something.
That's the
thing. That is so humiliating.
It really is.
That is so humiliating. Look, I wouldn't even ask somebody to sign it for free, right? Unless they were a close friend. I've become friends with a comic book, semi-famous comic book person.
I was hoping he was going to be there, but he is not.
He's not. He's actually, he's in Philly this weekend, and was in New York last weekend. It took, you know, I would say a full year of friendship before I got it up to be like, hey, is there any way you could sign a couple things for me? Because I'm such a huge fan. I was such a nerd. The idea of like paying some random famous person, because you know what? What the fuck is Hayden Christensen? Hayden Christensen ought to be asking you to sign things. You're Sonny Bunch. You're more famous and more important than he is.
I don't think that's true, because I'm pretty sure if I went to the Fan Expo and set up my own little booth, it was like $150 for my signature. You know how many I'd sell? Two. I bet two people would be confused enough that they would come up to me and ask
aren't
my
you that guy from Always Sunny in Philadelphia?
Don't you? No, Sonny Bunch.
They think you're
Jimmy
the Walton
Simpson.
Goggins
yeah.
character from Ant-Man.
I think you cannot have any self-respect if you go and ask
I don't think I can. That's the thing, is that now what I was hoping I might be able to do is bring it and like in the
green room.
Just
bumping with your gigantic
be like, oh, hey, I didn't
realize you were gonna be here.
airmail tags all over the tube. Again, it's this big. I can't even get it into the entire frame of the video. Hold on. There we
it's
go.
Very
there.
Large.
It's fucking enormous. I don't know what I'm gonna do with it.
There's something kind of hilarious at one of these cons that, like, for Hayden Christensen, you're not asking him to sign a Star Wars poster. You're asking him to sign a Shattered Glass poster. Like,
that's I bet there's something kind of funny about that. I would bet I would be one of only two or three people to ask for a Shattered Glass signature. I bet some people would maybe do that Italian pizza movie that he was in. But
oh gosh!
Shattered glass, I think, would be. I'd be the only one.
All right. Well, should we move on, guys? Should we? Spider-Man. I feel like
Oh my gosh! We
40 minutes almost.
40 minutes. We got to cut back on the dudes chatting, guys. We got to figure out a way to keep dudes chatting to 20 minutes.
The people love it.
People love the dudes chatting. We should just
cut my entire thing from Flash out this week.
we should make Across the Spider-Verse the bonus episode. We should just be like, you know what? That's all the time we're given.
Or maybe we should have a cliffhanger before we actually get into next week.
We'll only do half of the Across the Spider-Verse review and do the other half in the bonus.
To be continued. All right. Well, okay. Very quickly, box office, Spider-Man. Let's skip it. Okay. Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse is the number one at the box office. Sonny, give us the big boy review of Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse.
Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse stars lots of Spider-Men doing Spider-Man things. So here's describing this movie in detail would take a million hours because there's like 17,000 characters, and I don't want to do that. So instead, I want to talk about what works about the movie and what I think doesn't work about the movie. Here's what works about the movie. So Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse starts and ends. It's essentially bookended by Gwen Stacy's story. If this is anybody's movie, this is not actually a Miles Morales movie. It's a Gwen Stacy movie. Movie begins with her and ends with her. And the problem is she doesn't really have an arc. She just kind of ends up in the same place she was at the end of Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. It's neither here nor there. It's kind of interesting. I enjoyed watching her move through her life. We see the tragedy that, you know, defines her life, the death of Peter Parker, and how that turned her into Spider-Woman, or didn't turn her into Spider-Woman, but like gave her the, you know, the tragic death that she needs to whatever. The reason all this is in there is to set the actual mechanics of the plot in motion. At the end of this opening sequence, she becomes involved with this team of multidimensional spider people. Who are, you know, they're from all sorts of different universes, different Marvel universes, and they go around fixing interdimensional tears and making sure that the multiverse doesn't collapse in on itself. After this intro, we go back to Miles Morales, and he gets in a fight with Spot, which is a weirdly underbaked plotline, all the Spot stuff. But long story short, he goes to the League of Spider-Man, and the guy who's in charge of the League of Spider-Man hates Miles Morales because Miles is not supposed to be Spider-Man. He is he's canonically misaligned. He is not supposed to be a Spider-Man. And as we learn in this movie, Spider-Man and Spider-Women, all the spider people, all the spiders people in all the multiverses share the same canonical traumas. Your deaths of Uncle Ben's or whoever, the death of Captain Stacy, Gwen's father, the death of Gwen Stacy herself. One of the interesting things about Gwen Stacy in this movie is that she is one of the few Gwens not to die tragically in a way that kind of helps Spider-Man define himself. And Miles sees this and sees the acceptance of this amongst all the other Spider-Man and says, no, I'm not going to accept this. I am not defined by my trauma. I'm defined by other things. He goes off and he tries to go back to his universe. And spoiler, turns out he goes to the wrong universe because he has the wrong spider DNA. And he goes to a universe that doesn't have a Spider-Man. And because it doesn't have a Spider-Man, his Manhattan is basically like Escape from New York Manhattan. It's like a horrible, crime-ridden hellscape. Okay. Cut to black. To be continued. I find this to be fascinating. This is essentially Lord and Miller, the creators of this whole universe, saying that Spider-Man's reliance on the trauma plot. It's the trauma plot. It's like a generic term to describe the kind of modern compulsion to have trauma be the backstory of everything. Trauma as the explaining, inciting incident of everything. They are saying trauma should not define Spider-Man. The way that everybody sees Spider-Man is wrong. Spider-Man should not be defined by the death of Uncle Ben or the death of Gwen Stacy or the death of Captain Stacy or all of the other tragedies that Spider-Man goes through a lot of shit all the time in all the universe, just endless deaths and horrible things happening to Spider-Man all the time. And they say, no, that shouldn't be what happens. The problem is, within the movie itself, within the actual logical confines of the movie, the canonical traumas are necessary for the good of the universe. I mean, like, we see in the Mumbatan, the Indian version of Spider-Man, which imagines Manhattan as, like, Mumbai. The death of the Captain Stacy figure is averted, and immediately the universe starts to fall apart, like starts to blink out of existence. They call in the rest of the spider teams to set up little poles to stop the universe from collapsing. And then, of course, the big one is the fact that Miles becomes Spider-Man deprives another multiverse of their Spider-Man, and that the lack of Spider-Man there leads to total civilizational collapse, just crime everywhere. And so... The movie, it's within the text of the movie, the traumas are actually necessary. And I'm very interested to see how they write their way out of this. I'll tell you how I think they're going to do it. I think they'll probably end up doing it in the cheapest way possible, which is in the sequel, which is definitely not coming out next year. There's a 0% chance this movie comes out next year. You know why? Because they don't have a script and they haven't started recording any of the dialogue and they have none of it animated yet. Telling you where things are. This movie's not coming out next year. This movie will not be coming out till 2025 at the earliest, I would bet, and might not come out till 2026. I'm just laying down a marker. That's neither here nor there. The way they're going to solve this, I think, and maybe I'm wrong. I hope I'm wrong. But the way they're going to solve this is that they're going to have the canon-obsessed Miguel O'Hara, who's voiced by Oscar Isaac. He's playing Spider-Man 2099. They're going to have the canon-obsessed Spider-Man 2099. They're going to reveal that he is actually the one causing the universes to collapse. And because he is obsessed with his own trauma, he can't get over it. He's obsessed with canon, so he's doing it. And once they stop him or show him the error of his ways or whatever, all of the rest of it will stop. I mean, it's comic book. It's essentially magic. They can do whatever they want. And I'm convinced that this is the way they're going to solve the problem, which feels like an enormous cheat. Feels like an enormous cheat with what they've set up in this movie. again, maybe I'm wrong. I'm guessing here. I'm just thinking of how this is going to play out once they start putting it all together. Anyway, this is getting hung up on the plot of this stuff, though, is beside the point because it's one of the most fascinating visual movies I've ever seen in my entire life. It is like it is a collision of 100 different kinds of animation styles, all coming together in the same place. It's like the first one Into the Spider-Verse, except much more so, and in ways that I don't even entirely have the language to describe. So there's like the punk Spider-Man, Spider-Punk, who is animated in a Sex Pistols collage sort of way, which is really interesting. And like, apparently they did it in different frame rates, even within the character himself, which is what kind of gives it that weird
papery,
janky
quality
look. But like, I mean, anime, like watercolors, live action. It's amazing and beautiful and kinetic in a way that I have not seen in a mainstream animated feature in as long as I can remember. I can't remember a movie that has been this inventive, an animated movie that has been this inventive visually in my lifetime, in a setting where it is going to gross $400 million domestic and probably another $300 million worldwide. I mean, like, this is not a small movie. It's not a small success. It's going to be a huge movie. It's practically experimental with what they're doing. It looks amazing. I can't wait to see the next one. It is very much half a movie, and I am kind of heartened by all of the audiences turning on it at the end when the to be continued pop, because that's the thing I keep hearing again and again. Audiences like almost booing the screen when it cuts to black. Now, that said, audiences seem to be super into it and they're mad because they want more, but there was a definite like, wait, this is only part one, that was not even hinted at in the advertising.
Yeah.
Originally this movie was going to be called Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse Part 1. They should have just kept it that. If they had done that, audiences would have been totally fine with the cliffhanger ending. I think it would have been totally fine. But they pulled the bait and switch. People don't like that.
James Michael, tell me about... No, Michael, I want to hear your thoughts about this. Look, this is a movie that is universally beloved, Michael. Everybody loves it. So why don't you tell us how much you love it?
I feel like I gave you guys the misapprehension that I hated this movie over text, which I don't. I actually like this movie and I want to love it because of all the things that Sonny just went through about the visual marvel that it really is. And I felt like I still feel like I need to see it again just to catch everything. It's sort of like watching a Simpsons episode back in the old days where like there were like jokes and things on book titles and stuff that if you weren't watching closely enough, you need to watch it again. So I really like that. I like even the thematic ideas. Where the movie lost me is I didn't understand what was going on for like a lot of it. A lot of what I feel like I have a better understanding of what went on just from Sonny's explanation just now. For instance, like I don't quite understand. Question:
had you seen the first one?
I saw it twice. I saw it, and then my wife and I saw it. Like we loved that one. So I was like ready to like this one a lot. But I was confused. For instance, sort of the big twist is that he goes back to the universe, or he goes to the universe, looks just like his, except there's no Spider-Man. And that's the one that there should have been a Spider-Man, but he became the spider. So then I had to go back and think, wait, so were there two Spider-Mans in Miles? Is Miles just one of two in his universe? And I was,
yes.
Was where fat Peter Parker is.
No. He's remember the original, the actual
Chris Pine
Spider-Man.
Peter Parker.
Peter Parker dies in front of Miles Morales.
Yeah, okay.
By the Kingpin.
That's right. Okay, so like all of a sudden I'm like, I can't remember what I saw. And the thing that's a little confusing about this whole multiverse idea is like, I can't keep any of that straight. And I feel like part of it is because I did not read comic books extensively as a kid. This feels like a movie, and these feel like movies that really reward comic book readers in terms of the structure and the and the way in which the story kind of unfolds. Oh, there's like a reveal here. So like, okay. So then I didn't understand. So the spider came from the universe that Miles ends up in, but it bit him in his universe. And so that was bad. Like, I didn't understand why this was like his fault or like why he was a bad guy for being Spider-Man. Like that's,
he's not a bad guy. He's just a canonical mistake.
Okay. Here's the other thing I don't quite understand. If the whole point is that anybody can be Spider-Man, there's a Spider-Man in every universe because like everything is like anything is possible in all these multiple universes. Why is it tied down to this whole idea of a canonical event where everybody has this story? Like, I get that that's like the theme and the point of what they're grappling with, but I don't understand why that even has to be a thing. Like
they're trying to disrupt that. They're trying to break that idea.
But why is it an idea? I don't get it. Why is it an idea? Is every Spider-Man like this? Like, is every Spider-Man in the comics?
Well, that's the whole point of that sequence in the Spider-Man headquarters. Remember where you see all the people with their like ghost of the trauma behind them, and it's all the same thing.
Yeah,
like it's like a room of trauma. It's the trauma room.
Yes, but I don't get why that does not seem to mesh with the idea that anything can like any universe. Can have a Spider-Man. Well,
anything can't happen. Anybody can be Spider-Man, but the same bad things have to happen to all the Spider-Man. Otherwise, the universe unravels.
That makes no sense to me.
Well, I don't know what you want from Popsicle Spider-Man, but Popsicle Uncle Ben has to fucking die.
Question. That's what
Popsicle Uncle Ben has to die. If Popsicle Uncle Ben doesn't die, Popsicle Spider-Man can't be Spider-Man.
Okay, question.
Yes.
Where is MJ? I know there's the one with the baby, but like, where's MJ? Like, I thought MJ was a big deal. And all of a sudden it's like Gwen Stacy this and Gwen Stacy that. And I don't really know who Gwen Stacy is or why I should care about Gwen Stacy. My kids know who Gwen Stacy is because she's on the show that they like to watch with Spider-Man. One of those Spider-Man.
Ghost. She's Ghost. Ghost on Spider. The Spider Friends.
Ghost what? Spider.
Ghost Spider. Yeah.
What happened to
Miles Morales' spin? It's very, very controversial that they don't call him Spider-Man, they call him Spin.
My five-year-old corrects anyone who says Miles Morales is Spider-Man, because he says, no, he's Spin.
Yeah.
He's Spin. So I don't get what happened?
The Gwen Stacy thing is interesting because I started reading Spider-Man comics in the late 80s. The only reason I know Gwen Stacy is because I read, like, my first Spider-Man comics were these, like, five issue reprint, you know, little digests from the 1960s. I got like the early Amazing Spider-Mans and just would read them.
Did she die in issue 50? I want to say it's issue 50. I'm going to look this up while you talk.
I don't know. But I think it's later than that. I think it's.
So she's the original girl and then Mary Jane Watson is later? Or yes. I don't know because my real. I mean,
well, Mary Jane and Gwen were kind of competing for Peter.
Oh, so it's like Betty and Veronica.
Gwen dies. Gwen, yeah. Basically.
Betty Veronica.
121. Veronica dies. Sorry.
Oh, 120. Yeah, so way later. Like 10 years. 10 years into Spider-Man.
My point is that it was so overwhelming to me, the ideas and the visuals and the sort of sense that, like, things were happening and being revealed, and it was like the movie wanted you to go, whoa! And I was kind of like, wait, what? I couldn't even keep up. And I feel like a Philistine. I feel like a moron. And I don't like being made to feel like a moron, but that's what I feel like because I didn't follow this movie.
We call this Vic Mattis
don't you
syndrome.
Dare. Don't you dare.
You are fully.
I was afraid of.
You are our multiverse's new Vic Mattis. You've suffered the trauma of having to sit through a comic book movie that you don't understand, and it has broken your brain.
But it's not canonical for me to get gout, right? Is that?
Yes. No. I'm sorry.
Damn it.
You're going to be well, drinking cherry drink juice up. Before you know it.
Not until you're in your early 40s.
All right. So, okay. But everything else about this, I love the different visual styles meshing together. I thought it was great. I just didn't get into the movie. JVL. What do you think? What do you have to say?
We'll do that in the bonus. I loved it. I loved everything about it. It will depend on how well it sticks the landing. Right? I mean, it does become hard to evaluate a movie like this where it is not its own story.
Right, right.
You know, it's not like the Fellowship of the Ring is its own story. You don't need two towers. I mean, you need two towers, but, you know, Fellowship of the Ring is a beginning, a middle, and an end. This doesn't really... I fucking loved it. I'm sorry. I don't have anything brilliant to say other than I think it's wonderful, I mean, and everybody should see it.
Am I a moron? Like, am I a fool for not, like, buy... Because everybody loves it. So that makes me feel like I'm missing something. Or maybe I just need to be in a better mood when I see it.
I mean, I'm not going to say that about my co-host.
Well, Sonny would.
I think... I don't know. Look, I'm dying to see it again.
Okay.
Maybe you should give it another watch.
Yeah.
Here's one thing I'll say. I don't think it works as a kid's movie as well as the first one does. Because the first one... this is not as tight as...
Darker, too. Much darker.
Yeah, I don't know. I can see it both ways, but this is 2 hours and 20 minutes. Yeah, and
so long.
It's long and it's epic. I feel like it earns the length, but it does that at the expense of how fast Into the Spider-Verse moves from A to B to C to D. I mean, that whole movie is just on rails. There's no wasted motion. And here, the truth is, if they had wanted to get it down to 205, they could have done that.
I mean, again, it's a weirdly structured movie where you have they try to make it feel like a complete movie by having the Gwen stuff at the beginning and the end. The beginning is like, how is Gwen gonna get out of her funk? She needs to find community, and she finds a community in this Spider-Verse league, and it turns out they suck. She hates them. So at the end of it, she's back with Spider-Man Noir and Spider-Ham and Peter B. Parker, and they've got some new friends, but like it's a simulation of an arc. It's a straight line. It's a circle. Just gets back to where she started.
I will say, like the original, but even more so, it is laugh out loud funny. I mean, I found myself guffawing out loud in the theater probably 7 or 8 different times. It's just so funny and brilliantly conceived.
I have a question. Why were those from the first, the gang from the first one, the Spider Pig and the Nick Cage Spider-Man, all that? Why were they sidelined for this movie? Is there a plot reason why? I was sort of like looking forward to, like, because I loved all those characters. I loved like Nick Cage as like the, you know, moody noir Spider-Man, and they like show up in the end, and I was kind of like, oh, I want to see more of them.
God only knows what the contract situation is like when you're dealing with a John Mulaney and a Nick Cage and like trying to schedule it. And you gotta, you know, in theory, it seems like they're all going to be back for the next one, but who knows what any of that, that results.
Okay. Any final,
I would say that that is more of a business problem than an artistic problem.
No.
My short answer.
Well, and I wasn't making an artistic, critique. I was just curious because they showed up and I went, oh yeah, I like those guys. Yeah. I want to see more of them. All right. Any final thoughts on Across the Spider-Verse? Okay. Nope. Well, that's all the time we're going to give to this episode. Check us out at subbeacon.com. I didn't get to do this at the beginning. Subbeacon.com. You can become a member, listen, comment. You'll get our bonus episodes. Thanks for listening. You have a outtake here?
Any spider outtakes? JBL, any more thoughts? What are your thoughts on the whole central idea, the trauma, the rejection of the trauma plot?
Well, I don't know that it is a rejection, though, right? I mean, you're assuming that they're going to decide that, no, Spider-Man doesn't need his trauma. I don't know that that's where they're going to come down.
If they go the opposite direction and they're like, actually, Miles does have to, like, sacrifice his father or something.
Well, he lost his uncle, right? He lost his uncle.
Well, he lost his uncle. Right? He lost his uncle. Yeah. Right?
Aaron is part of that.
It's not really an Uncle Ben situation. I feel like they have really written themselves into a corner for the story that they want to tell. It seems very clear the story they want to tell. And it is unclear to me that they are going to be able to figure out how to tell that story.
Well, for whatever it's worth, I do not It is not clear to me that they want to reject the trauma stuff. It seems to me they want to play with the idea, and it's unclear to me where they're going to come down.
I could see
but,
that.
That's just my read.
Can I say real quick, I loved the Lego Spider-Man universe.
Yeah.
It was so much fun. Obviously, they made the Lego movies, but it was so much fun. I did feel like these little forays into the other Spider-Verses, I was like, I'd want to watch an entire movie in several
about all
of
them.
Yes.
Right? Yeah.
So that I liked it. I want to love it. Help me love it, guys.
That's Daniel Kaluuya. How do you spell his last name? How do you say his last name?
Yeah, Kaluuya. Yeah.
He's fucking fantastic. Is he a Brit?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, but that's his actual.
That's his natural voice. Yeah.
I remember when he gave his acceptance speech at the Oscars and sounded like that. And I was like, oh, he is a good actor.
That guy's a movie star. I love him.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm sure it's fine. All right.